Afternoon session, and I have the pleasure of introducing Mieke Schuurmoerman. She is coordinator. You're within child rights and participation, so Eurochild Senior Policy and Advocacy Coordinator. And she has dedicated her life. She's been working in promoting children's rights and strengthening the capacity national players have in promoting their participation and effective participation in relevant matters. So I would like to give her the floor again, pass the floor. Because we still have a Q&A period this afternoon so that we can take advantage of our excellent speakers and still have some time for a Q&A period on most of the presentations we've heard. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the introduction. I think there are actually still some people arriving, so I'm starting anyway. Thank you for the invitation to speak here and also to be here in the Senate room in Portugal. It's really an honor to be able to speak here on behalf of Eurochild. I would like briefly to say a few words about Eurochild, the organization I'm working for. It's a European network of almost 200 organizations working for children's rights. And their members are mainly NGOs, non-governmental organizations, but we also have academic institutions in membership, some child-led organizations, and some public authorities. The basis of our work is the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. And we have three key priorities. The first one is to combat child poverty and social exclusion. The second one is to deinstitutionalize children, so to make sure children are growing up in family-based alternative care, not in big institutions. And the third one is to put children's rights at the heart of Europe. And to realize our priorities, we work with our membership. We also have members here in Portugal. One of them is also here in the room. And we also work directly with children and young people because we believe it's very important to involve children in all of the work that we are doing. And to be able to do that, we started to develop a child participation strategy. So about 3 years ago, we started with a group of children and young people and a group of members of Eurochild with an expertise in child participation to develop an internal child participation strategy because we wanted to make sure that children are able to participate in our advocacy work so that we can influence policies at European and national level. We wanted them to help us developing our strategic planning, so to take part in our general assemblies, and also to help us with organizing major events, because we have a big conference every 2 years, and we would like that to do that together with children. So after about half a year, this child participation strategy was ready, so developed by children and adults. And we decided then to, part of that strategy is that we set up a Eurochild Children's Council. So that's a European body with children participating in our work, but also to set up at national level national Eurochild forums to be able to also involve children from disadvantaged backgrounds, to be able to involve children from different age groups, from different geographical parts in the countries, to be able to be really inclusive. And we did a pilot in three countries, and I will tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. And we also set up a child participation reference group, which is a group of members of Eurochild with an expertise in child participation. These members are have a very diverse expertise. Some of them are coming from NGOs, some of them are academics, others are young people that have been involved with us when they were a child and now grown up and still want to share their expertise. So that's the main structure that we set up. So the Eurochild Children's Council, you see a few pictures on the screen of the work that they are doing. The first Eurochild Children's Council's term already finished this April. They have been in the Eurochild Children's Council for 2 years. And a new Children's Council has been set up. You see a picture of the new council. And the youngest member is 11 years old, and the oldest one is 15 or 16. They're coming from all over Europe. They're from Ireland to Ukraine, Bulgaria, Cyprus, Finland. Yeah, it's every child is from a different country in Europe. And they are helping us with our advocacy work. You see a few pictures here where children have been active. For example, they have been coming to the European Parliament on World Children's Day, the 20th of November. They've done that already for 2 years, and they were meeting then with members of European Parliament. So they were meeting with the members of their national members of European Parliament to talk about their concerns and about their issues. Some members of European Parliament were very open to their concerns, and some were less open. They didn't really know why these children were coming to meet them. But they made the effort and were able to meet with the children. They were also involved in designing, together with Eurochild and UNICEF, a survey, an online survey, which is called the Europe Kids Want Survey. This survey has been online for a year. It's just finished by the end of June. And we asked children questions about their school, about their rights, about what they think about Europe. Do you think Europe is important for you, and why is it important? What are your key concerns in your life? And all of these kind of questions. Well, actually, Eurochild and UNICEF started to develop these questions, and we had lots of questions we wanted to ask the children. Then we went to our Eurochild Children's Council, and we said to them, well, these are the questions we want to ask. What do you think about it? And they came back with quite a lot of comments and also some critical remarks, and they suggested changes, different questions, different wording. And we listened to them, and we adapted then the questionnaire, and they then helped us to disseminate the questionnaire with children all across Europe. And we got about 20,000 children that replied. The results are, you can find on the Eurochild website, but one of the key outcomes was that the concerns of children. So the top three concerns are that particularly older children are very concerned about getting a job when they are getting older, when they get from their schools. But also violence is a key concern for children, and climate change, which probably is also not surprising with the climate marches going on. You see also one of the pictures is from Konstantinos, where he's speaking actually at the UN. This was mentioned already before this morning, the General Day of Discussion on Children as Human Rights Defenders. And Konstantinos is a member of our Children's Council, and he went there to represent the European children at the General Day of Discussion. And he apparently did so well that he was then invited by Michelle Bachelet, the high-level human rights coordinator, and she invited him to the celebrations of the Human Rights Declaration in December. The children have also been very active at national level to promote children's rights, to go to meetings, to talk to local politicians, to local people, be on local radios, television stations, etc. As I mentioned before, we also have our national Eurochild forums that we piloted in 3 countries, and we then evaluated on how it works and what didn't work well and what we should do differently. Well, in the 3 countries, Malta, Bulgaria, and Estonia, where we piloted it, the thing that did work is they all involved children from very different backgrounds. So they had disabled children, Roma children, migrant children, LGBT children, so very diverse groups of children that they were able to talk to. And one of the examples from which you see a picture here is from Malta, because Malta is relatively small country, so they were able to go to all the schools in that country to talk about children's rights. And after the talk, they asked the children to design a T-shirt about what they think is important, to why it is important to listen to children. And the campaign they called You Matter, No Matter What. All the T-shirts, I think there were about 80 or 100 T-shirts, were brought to the European Parliament and were exhibited there. And you see here a picture with two children from Malta that came to the Parliament to present their campaign. So that's Eurochild's internal structure. As I told you, we also organize conferences every 2 years. And we do that together with children. So the last conference was actually about the topic of today, how children should participate in public decision making. It took place in Croatia, in Opatija, a child-friendly city, at the end of October. And the conference was organized together with a group of children, and they were also helping to facilitate. It's not a conference like this, where you sit the whole day and listen to speeches, but it's a very interactive conference which we organize, because we have a lot of workshops, we go on study visits, we organize a human library, which means that people who have a story to tell from their work or from their experience, they can become a book, and you can borrow the book and have a little chat with the book about the experience of that person or of that organization. And before that conference, we prepared a background document, and I wanted to share some of the findings from that background document, because we also consulted a lot of organizations across Europe about this, about how to involve children in public decision making. So the most effective way to convince decision makers about the value of child participation that came out from the survey is that 72% of the respondents said it leads to better services. So you have to be aware that when you consult with children, it's worth the investment, it's worth the time, because your services, or for example, if you consult them in schools, your school programs, they will become better, and it will be will have a better impact also on the children and on the work that you're doing with them. 69% said it's a right. Yes, it's a right. It's written down in the UN Convention on Children's Rights. We've all heard several speakers talk about Article 12 in that UN Convention. And 68% says it helps children to become empowered, which is very true from all the experience that we have in working with children. I've seen children coming in, for example, when we started our first Eurochild Children's Council. Some children were quite young, and they were sitting there really shy and thinking, what on earth am I doing here? But we do a lot of training, we do a lot of work with them, so we try to support them to be able to become representatives for their rights, to be able to meeting with politicians, and that really works really well. But I must also say that some of the children we work with, actually recently we had a conversation with some of the children in our new Children's Council, and they were talking about the problems that they experienced. Some of them had meetings with their ministries, Ministry of Education, and this ministry government official said, well, you're only causing problems, why should we listen to you? And this child was quite shocked that she was told this. And then the other children in the group said, yeah, we've had similar experiences. They also told us that we are causing problems, and why should we listen to you? So there are already a lot of people convinced that it's important, but there are also still a lot of people who have no idea why it is important to listen to children and why it is their right. So, what is the policy context at European level? Well, the basis is, of course, first the UN Convention on Children's Rights, Article 12. We have heard a lot about that already. And next to that, at European level, we have the Council of Europe. We also heard about that we have their recommendation on the right for children, young people under the age of 18 to participate. But we also have at European Union level a European Commission recommendation on investing in children. And that recommendation on investing in children has three pillars, and one pillar is about the right for children to participate and to be able to participate in decision makings, about the running of services, about the policy planning, Yeah, and also to it also says that we should reach out to the most disadvantaged children in our society. And a more recent European achievement is the European Pillar of Social Rights. That's a document with social rights. And in that document, or at least in the explanatory note to that document, there is a call on all EU member states to develop a national strategy on child participation. So that's really something we should keep in mind. So what is the current situation in Europe? Well, there is a lack of culture of listening to children. There is inadequate resourcing, which means not enough staff, not enough funding to be able to listen to children. There are not adequate participation structures. So there are, of course, a lot of good examples, but there's not enough done on that. Children's views are often not taken seriously. As I just told you, they're causing problems instead of having something serious to tell you. And there's also a lack of opportunities for disadvantaged children, like disabled children, migrant children, children living in poverty. And also the UN committee has raised in their concluding observations to at least 21 European countries that they should make a greater effort to for children to be involved in development of policy making. On the positive side, there's also a lot of positive things happening. We will hear later from Ireland. They have a national child participation strategy, the only country in Europe who has this. Also in Croatia, there's a national children's rights action plan, and one of the pillars is also the right for children to participate. But we have to remember that all children, whatever their background is and whatever their age is, they need to be able to participate in public decision-making. So how can children and how do children participate in public decision-making? So I want to share a few concrete examples, because it often helps to understand how that works. So for example, children are asked by governments sometimes to participate. For example, in Slovakia, children between the age of 11 and 14 years old were involved to contribute to a national action plan for children. In Ireland, they consulted children on after-school care program. Also, children's ombudspeople often consult with children. For example, in Estonia, children wanted to lower the age of to vote. And the children's ombudsman was supporting that. And in the end, the law to vote is lowered till 16. And there are several other countries in Europe that also have a lower voting age for children. So it's voting age is then 16 instead of 18. Also, many NGOs and academics are involving children in their research or in their work. For example, in Serbia, an NGO was involving children to develop a national strategy against violence against children. In the Netherlands, there are examples of children who experience poverty at local level. They are coming together and meet with the local politicians to talk about their experiences and what should be done about that at local level. And both for the children, it's really empowering them, but also the local politicians really felt it was an eye-opener for them, because the children came up with solutions and with problems that they hadn't thought about themselves. So, it really became a continuous dialogue between these children and the local decision makers. Also, in budgetary decisions, sometimes children are involved. For example, this child-friendly city Opatija in Croatia. They have a children's council, and they also have a children's mayor, and they are also involved in the budget decisions of the city of Opatija. There are also some examples in the UK and in Spain, but actually, maybe it's surprising, but the best examples where children are involved in budgetary decisions is in Latin America. For example, also in Brazil, they have quite good structures in place. Another good example actually is the Scottish Children's Parliament, which I wanted to share with you, which is the last one for the moment. The Scottish Children's Parliament wanted to meet with their Scottish government, because they have their own government. And they wanted to discuss that there need to be equal opportunities for all children in Scotland. And they met with the cabinet of the Prime Minister of Scotland, and they then got a change in the law of Scotland after their meeting. And the cabinet of the government felt it was so inspiring and so good to meet with these children that they said we should do this every year. So now it's a regular, a regular opportunity for the children and for the government to meet with them. So how will we know when public decision makers are doing well? So how will you know when you are involving children in a way that is supported by the UN Convention on Children's Rights? Well, we heard about the Laura Lundy model this morning, so about the space. You need to create the space, you need the audience, the voice, and the influence. But and also we heard about the scope, whether it can be consultative, so you only consult children, you ask their opinions, or collaborative, so you work together with them on, for example, new policy or new law, or it's child-led, like the marches for children on the street or other child-led initiatives that can happen as well. How can you check your quality? It hasn't been mentioned before, but a person we've been working with a lot, and she works also a lot for UNICEF and the UN committee, is Gerrison Lansdowne, and she developed the 9 requirements, 9 principles for child participation. Well, actually, she named them, but they're based on Article 12 and the general comment on Article 12. And these requirements are that you need to be transparent when you involve children, you need to be informative, so children need to know what it is about. You need to respect them, so you need to respect their opinions. It has to be relevant for them, and then don't think, well, I'm not consulting them about the budget because that's not relevant. There often is a relevance for children, but you have to make it clear to them what the relevance is. It has to be voluntary. You can never force children to participate. So also in the work that we do with children, it's always voluntary, and if they want to step out, if they need a break, they are allowed to do that. It needs to be child-friendly, so they need to feel safe, a safe environment, and child-friendly. It needs to be inclusive, so we need to be able to have all children to participate. It needs to be accessible also for disabled children. It needs to be supported by training, so you need to be able to train the people working with them, and also the children need to be trained. It needs to be safe, so child protection is really important. Also in Eurochild, we have a child protection policy, and we feel that child participation and child protection are really reinforcing each other. So for children to be protected, they need to be able to have their voice heard, and to have your voice heard, you need to be protected. And the last principle is accountability or feedback, and that's what I personally also feel is a very important point. When you speak with children, when you ask their opinions, you have to give them feedback and be accountable to them what you're doing with their opinions. Also, if you do not take them into account and there's a reason for that, explain it to them why you're not taking it into account, because otherwise they get fed up and they feel, well, these adults are not listening to me anyway, so I'll quit. So that's accountability and feedback is really, really important principles. To sum up, actually the most effective ways to increase inclusion of all children to participate is to evaluate your activities. So were your activities really accessible? Were disabled children able to participate? Were children from the migrant community able to participate? Also train staff and young people to be able to engage with children from different backgrounds. Use a variety of communication methods when you engage them. Also ask children themselves how they think we can include children from disadvantaged backgrounds. Monitor who was included, and also have access to the disadvantaged children so you can work with, for example, disability organizations or organizations working with migrant or asylum-seeking children, and in that way try to involve them in your work. So we developed a checklist for governments, what you need to do to be able to involve them in your decision-making. Well, if you go through all these questions, I won't go through all of them, but I will mention the blocks. The rights-based approach is really important, so you need to put it down in legislation and in law that children have a right to participate, and I'm very happy to hear that here in Portugal the laws are apparently in place. But then the next one is resources. We need time and money and staff to be able to implement these laws and the policies that we have, and also to be able to engage with disadvantaged children. And we also need resources to be able to train people to work with the children. We need relationships, which means we need spaces where children are able to meet. And also, for example, children's ombudspersons are really important people to work with if you have them. And then the last one, review, you need to monitor and to evaluate what you're doing and then see what are the challenges and how can we address them. So this is actually a summary of what I just mentioned. You need the measures to protect the right to participate, so you need the laws. You need measures to promote the right to participate, so you need education and training. You need spaces for child participation. You need to be inclusive, and you need to have accountability, so to give feedback to the children. And as I told you, we had this conference in Croatia about children's involvement in public decision-making, and we had three key recommendations that came out of it, and these were really formulated together with the children, or the children came with the ideas that should be in the recommendations, and we said we should not have more than three because that's enough. And the first one is that every government in Europe needs to make sure that teaching of children's rights is a mandatory part of the curriculum in every school. Also, every government in Europe should implement an inclusive participation strategy for all children. So that's also based on what I told you about the pillar of social rights that the EU has asked all governments to have a national strategy on child participation. And also every government in Europe should give evidence on why, on how they have involved children and what the impact is on children, of their laws and their policies. I would like to end with a positive example actually from the EU, from the Romanian EU presidency. The Romanian EU presidency has just finished yesterday. They had the presidency the first half of this year, and they had child participation as their priority on the agenda, which was a very, we were very happy with that. And Eurochild worked very closely with UNICEF and the National Authority for Children's Rights in Romania to work with them on this child participation priority. So in Romania, they formed a children's board. So they had a group of children from all across Romania to develop a children's declaration. And from this children's group, four children were elected to be EU junior ambassadors. So to promote the children's declaration and also to promote the right for children to participate. So this children's declaration was developed firstly by the Romanian children, but then Eurochild and UNICEF made sure that children from across Europe were able to give their views on the declaration and to give input to it. And then it culminated all in a children's summit, which was the beginning of May in Bucharest, where the children and government representatives came to an agreement on the children's declaration, which is now ready. So the key points from the children's declaration is, it's that the EU should have a clear roadmap or children's agenda, for children to be heard. Also, the staff working in EU institutions should receive training on children's right to be heard. We should have structured dialogue mechanisms for children at EU level, and increase also the sources and the scope of the European Commission Children's Rights Coordinator. So the European Commission has a special Children's Rights Coordinator, and we should keep the European Parliament intergroup on children's rights. We've just had European Parliament elections in May, and the prospects are quite positive that the European Parliament intergroup on children's rights will remain. We also should make sure that when the EU is having funding programs affecting children, that they have a requirement that children should participate in these funding programs. They also asked for the European Parliament to have an annual state of play on children's rights. And the children asked for every trio presidency, so every three presidencies, so every 1.5 years, to have a high-level children's event. Portugal has the EU presidency in 2021, and well, it's maybe a call to you to work with your colleagues in the other countries. I think it's Slovenia and Germany to take this forward. I want to stop actually with a quote from Princess Laurentine. She's from the same country as I'm from. I'm Dutch. She's a Dutch princess, and she spoke at our conference. And she said, "I'm sorry on behalf of adults. I have only two pieces of advice. Children, remain yourselves. Don't be predictable. Trust yourselves. And the message to the decision makers, don't just listen, but change attitude and ask questions." And I would like to add to that, involving children should be the new normal. So we should not have to explain why children have to be involved and have to have their opinions heard, but we should turn it around and say, why should they not be heard? Why? What is the reason not to listen to them? And that's where I would like to end.
Muito obrigada, Mica, pela interessante intervenção. Eu acho que nós temos agora 15 minutos que podemos aproveitar para ter um diálogo com quem quiser participar. Eu ia convidar o Borges, mas ele entretanto saiu, mas para se juntar a nós. Mas eu dava então o floor à audiência para se citarem as questões que considerem importantes. E só agradecia que se apresentassem previamente para nós sabermos mais ou menos qual é a vossa área de intervenção. Bem, eu vou aproveitar.
So I'm going to ask the first question. So as I'm from the EU, and taking into account the fact that most national legislations result from European legislation, I would like to know how this awareness is created within the scope of your European decision makers, because I think it's a very important thing to recognise and promote the right to participation, and also to serve as a model for member states and organisations, European organisations. So what is your work in this area of awareness raising?
Bem, eu acrescento. Eu sei que
I'd just like to add something that as to your work, I know that you have an ambition to want to have a commissioner responsible for children's rights. Why do you think this would be important for your strategy?
Yeah, that's right. Eurochild has just started a campaign to get a commissioner for children's rights. The reason for that is so because now we're all in the negotiations for the president of the European Commission. I'm sure you have followed that in the news, and it's still not sure who that's going to be. But of course, the rest of the commission is also going to be appointed soon. And we believe that if there is a commissioner with a designated responsibility for children's rights, it will give more visibility to children's rights and also more of an opportunity to make sure that children's rights are taken into account in all of the EU's policies and legislation. At the moment, there's only a very small unit, I think with only three staff or four staff in the European Commission dealing with children's rights, with the children's rights coordinator, and we believe it should have much more capacity and much more prominence in the European Commission.
Ok, thank you. E temos aqui também o Braga. Muito obrigado por se juntar aqui à nossa mesa. E eu deixava também aberta esta possibilidade de submeterem algumas questões a estes nossos convidados, aproveitando esta excelente oportunidade de partilhar o trabalho que fazem.
the hill.
Passa, por favor.
José de Fonseca, Caritas, and the Portuguese Volunteers Association. I have, or rather, I feel that what concerns me now, and I'm talking slowly so as the interpreters can follow me, says the gentleman, but maybe it would be... I should ask this at the end of the day, but I don't know if I'll be here. But maybe my partners here today can take advantage of this. So we are talking about the participation of children. I would like to thank you for giving me this opportunity to go into detail on a topic this is very dear to us all, and that's why we're all here, and so I'd like to thank the organization. And to have this international perspective also gives us hope, because the question I'm going to ask is this. How can we talk about the participation of children when around... them, the levels of participation are tiny, or sometimes fatalistic, said the gentleman. I'm thinking about Portugal and specifically. In the opening session, it said that we have very low and concerning levels of participation in elections, and the participation doesn't give us much hope. Now, for youth and for children, is extremely worrying, because they think, well, no, why should I participate, because everything's so bad. Secondly, what type of fabric do we have? And so perhaps I could ask you this question. What experience of their education do you have where the pupils feel that they are an integral part of the education they receive, or do we have a system that is just addressed to pupils and without participation? And so I'd leave a challenge to the organization, perhaps with you would like to answer to. Once again, we... see those who make the opinion, because in the media the children are hardly ever heard, and in the media children either appear to advertise something, or they appear as victims of some terrible situation, but they are never given a voice in the media. And I'd like to blow my own horn. So how can we get children who live in situations of poverty and violence, how can we get them to believe in participation? Because here there's a major challenge. Participating is not enough. We have to see the effective results of the participation that we have. Because talking and just talking and feeling and with the feeling that nobody's listening to us is very discouraging. And so I sort of leave here with all these concerns in my mind. Thank you very much.
Muito obrigada. Alguma questão mais? Podíamos juntar uma ou duas questões.
Thank you very much. Maybe we could add one or two questions. No? Okay. So maybe you would like to say something?
Obrigada.
Hello? Do you hear me? Yes. Thank you for your deliberations. Now, I presume that we are about the same age. And when we were being brought up, as has been pointed out in the discussion earlier today, we were not supposed to speak or participate, for that matter. And that's probably the reason why I am more optimistic about the children and youth of today. They are more encouraged than we were when we were being brought up in the 50s and the 60s or whenever, when we were not supposed to speak. Now, with regard to this issue, why should we expect children to be more active than the generation before, the parents and the grandparents? I think we have, there are a number of issues here that are of importance. Number one is the educational system, both in terms of the general education on human rights, and the organization of education as such. We fortunately have surpassed the authoritarian educational system that used to exist. And today we have generally very well-educated teachers, very conscious of human rights issues. And we have seen how the Convention on the Rights of the Child has had a wonderful impact on all development, not only domestically but internationally. And every we've seen increased, enhanced international collaboration and international awareness on the rights of children. So governments and international agencies are doing a lot of work to enhance the status of children in this respect, like this event here today is an evidence of. So I think we are seeing a development that was fueled by the Convention on the Rights of the Child towards enhanced implementation of children's rights as human beings. You asked an interesting question about the media. You pointed correctly out that children, they do not appear to be in the media so much. And then I asked myself, well, there have been remarkable changes in media, during media audience during the past years. Children, for example, they do not watch media so much. Their world is the virtual world. It's the information and communications technology. That's where their communications are primarily to be found today. That's where they acquire their information, and that's where their learnings and social relationships take place to a certain extent. And that's why we need to divert our attention very much to this world, which is new to my generation. And I often say that in terms of upbringing of children, when in the feudal society, so to speak, in the agricultural society before cities, there used to be what was called the silent upbringing. You didn't need to communicate with children because you generally had multi-generational families, so the children were there, observed the elder, both the parents and grandparents, and there was no need for verbal communication. And then you had the cities, and there was a total change in the social environments of families, children and adults and children. And then the communication between the verbal communication between children and parents became crucial in terms of upbringing of children. And now we are going into still the third phase, where the virtual phase, where the communication through information and communication technology has more or less taken over. And that's why we need to reconsider our approach very much to the to children and the young generations of today. I don't know if this answers any of your deliberations, but I think they were very valuable. Thank you.
Obrigada. Faz favor.
Thank you. There's no interpretation because there's no sound. I can't hear the lady. Thank you.
Então, boa tarde.
Good afternoon. My name is Margaret Dias. I'm the founder of the parental school, and I work with school families. I work with schools too, and other entities which are directly related to families and children. And so this idea of listening is a great obstacle. Most of our obstacles think that listening means giving in and doing what the child wants. But what I see in my daily work is that there's no consolidated work between the civil society. And so, for example, my question is, how is it in your country, how do you manage to get the whole of society in a more joint fashion, and you're moving forward to changing mentalities? And I think there's a great change of mentality, because a child is an integral citizen, has full rights, and so involving the child in the decision-making process of getting a child to say whether he wants to do one thing or another, and for example, a very concrete the child that I worked with recently, the father died, and the child was 11 years old, and they had to ask the family, because they didn't want the child to say goodbye to the father, and he wasn't given this option. So you had to hear the child, and how are we going to change this? So how do you do this? So I think it looks as if you're all working together, and we are not.
I hope I understood your question right. So you're asking how civil society is working together with governments and all do everything together?
The adults
and children together, yeah.
How do you do that?
It's partly because our the member organizations we work with, they also have relationships with government officials and are able to liaise with them. Or do you mean also adults and children working together?
Firstly, adults,
because if you change the mind of the adults, then you can listen entirely to the children with no barriers, because you're not afraid. I think grown-ups are afraid of listening.
Yeah. Well, my experience is that when adults are getting the experience of working with children, they often change their mindset. So you have to give them a first opportunity often to be able to understand what it is to listen to children. So, for example, when we have our conferences, one-third of the participants are children, the others are adults. At our last conference, we had several adults who had a mind-opening experience, because they didn't realize how it is to work directly with children, and they went home and they are changing the structures in their organizations. Some of them are service providing organizations for children. They are now changing the way they work and want to listen to children more in the way they work. Unfortunately, you often have to give them the experience first. The other thing I wanted to say, and I also raised before, is very important, is to train professionals already at the professional education. So when they train to be a teacher or a social worker or a health worker or a legal professional, they need to be trained on what it is to listen to children and why it is important to listen to children, how you communicate with them. And I think that's the basis for it. So,
Bem, temos aqui jovem. Não sei se quer vir aqui até à mesa fazer-nos uma pergunta.
I don't know whether you want to come up and ask a question. I didn't want to embarrass him, but no. Okay, fine. But for him and others that were here, and this question of communication is strategic in order to be able to give totally change our system. Any more questions? Good afternoon. As first of all, as we have to learn to speak, we have to learn to respect our children. I'm not going to force them to speak, but my name is Rita Gatu. I'm a member of the Portuguese Communist Party, and I would like to congratulate the them. If you could ask the lady to slow down, that would be a real help. And so the question that has been done is... So, thank you very much. So I'm not going to be able to stay the whole afternoon because I have to go to the plenary session, which is taking case in the National in the National Assembly. So I just want to share two situations, which is the first has got to do with an experience that happened with me in an initiative that took place here in the Institute of the Children's Support Institute. And then I met the director of this institution, and the next day it was the party at the end of the year of the institution, and there were the teachers there, parents were there, and many relatives were there, and then invited them to come to the National Assembly to come, and they came here, and this ended up by coinciding with the State of the Nation speech. Now, when we went round the visit and when we came to this room, they sat down here, and I said, today, this is because of the debate of the State of the Nation, which means that the Prime Minister and the members of the government are going to come here and discuss this. And if you want to talk in the plenary, if you want to ask any questions to the Prime Minister and the ministers about the State of the Nation, what's the state of the nation, our lives, and so what would you like to ask? What would you like to ask the Prime Minister? And what would you like to ask the ministers? And so there were some over the age, in the age of 16. And it wasn't surprising, but it was interesting to understand that what they wanted to ask the Prime Minister and the members of the government had got to do with jobs, unemployment, what measures could be taken so that their parents could have more work, and what measures could be taken to ensure that there were more professional internships, for example. And so these were obviously material concerns. And so I think that is of no surprise, but still it shows the level of concern. It wasn't surprising that they didn't talk about access to higher education and other things. I think they should make us think. And this morning we heard the intervention of Dr. Anna Correa about the structural inequalities and how what happens to the parliament. Every year organises the youth parliament and invites hundreds of schools of all over the country. I think it was only last year that a child with special needs came for the first time. So structural inequalities reflected everywhere. Another thing that I want to talk about, but we've already spoken about this, it's got to do with the conditions, informal conditions of participation. That is the participation of children in sports, for example. The question he asked me was, why don't clubs have little vans or buses to take the children to the games? Now, this seems to be very simple, but this means that those children whose parents don't have parents, for example, or don't have parents, can't afford it, they want to the game and they can't go because this backup structure doesn't really exist. And so this morning, when he was other children in ever different contexts with lots of different types of children, And so this leads me to think that even until a child is aware that has a right to be heard, things are going to take a long time, because I think that from the point of view of legislation in Portugal, we have a very good advanced legislation, and it's not possible to work on the rights of children without working on this awareness in families and the children without families. It doesn't seem to work in this. Families have to understand this is the right they have. No, it's not a nuisance. It's a natural right, because this is important in the public decision. So the awareness of the rights and their exercise is very important. And for people who are concerned or so, as so for people who have who are very badly off, I mean, it is a great way for them to get to the situation of actually talking about participation. But so this is a democracy, and people because people are heard, and they're heard about their individual lives and collective lives, and so this is a challenge that we still have to work on very much indeed. Thank you.
Obrigada pela sua reflexão.
Thank you very much for your reflection, which allows us to finish this panel. I don't know whether you would like to say anything just before we go.
A very brief response. I think your intervention was excellent, because it reminds us of the core of these participatory rights, which is that it must be inclusive, and we must make sure that children in the broad experiences of children are reflected in the participation. And there is certainly marginalized children, children living in poverty, children living with disabilities, etc., etc. We must ensure, by creating this, what I was referring to in the London model as being space and the voice for the different groups of children. They are not homogeneous groups. We must always remember that. We must treasure the different experiences. And some children have been really a very adverse childhood experience that we must make sure that we are listening to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that we can move on to the next panel. Thank you very much. And the next panel belongs to Mary Arch.
So there won't be a coffee break, and we still have in the atrium, we have a coffee station for anyone wishing to drink a coffee or water. And now we're going to listen to international experiences in child participation. I would like to ask Olive McGovern, who is Youth Reform and Strategy and Participation Unit of Ireland, Ellie Vin Pedersen, National Coordinator of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, and Senior Vice County Governor Office of and Bjorn Bresen, former Deputy Director General, Ministry of Children, Equality and Social Inclusion of Nowhere, that I'd like to pass the floor to right away. Ninguém ouve.
Que eu estou a fazer pouco. Olha, um nó está com ar tão velho.
got no teeth. Cacho dentado, é por isso que ele tem esse aspecto. He lost all his teeth.
But why didn't he get him fixed this, put something in?
He lost his teeth. Está completamente desdentado.
Ah,
eu
good
fiquei, ouve lá. Oh.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. You can pick up a cup of coffee if you want. That was a message. But you can come back to the room at once. So, thank you. Well, welcome to this session. First of all, I would like to thank the Portuguese for inviting me to this conference. I have been in contact with the Portuguese Commission just for a few months, just to discuss how to apply for some money from the EEA grants, and also to see how they would like to work with a Norwegian partner. So the city of Oslo is a partner for this commission now on this project. Now, the headline of this session is International Experience Regarding Children's Participation. We have two countries on the podium. On my right-hand side, Olive McGovern, representing Ireland, and on my left side, Evin Pedersen, representing Norway. I know they have a lot to tell you, but I hope 20 minutes each will be sufficient to give you a picture from each of the countries concerning strategies and participation. Olive is working as principal officer in the Youth Reform Strategy and Participation in the Irish Department of Children and Youth Affairs. She has a central role in following up the implementation of the national strategy on children and young people's participation in decision-making. Eivind has been working for several years as head of the Children's Family Unit at the County Governor's Office in the County of Tromsø in Norway. It's very far north. In recent years, he has been appointed national coordinator of implementing new efforts of the CRC, also the Convention on the Rights of the Child. Shortly, they will both touch upon national plans, strategies and efforts to strengthen children and young people's voices and participation. Attention will be devoted to policy, legislation and implementation strategies on different levels, as for the state or regions or municipalities. They have both inter alia used models and instruments to strengthen the implementation work. Uli was going to present the Lundy model. I think she will have some comments on it, but we have heard about that model early this morning. Eivind, he has used the model called the Giant Leap. It's used nationwide in Norway. And if you can keep a secret, he has developed it himself. It's a very, very good model. Well, it's fruitful to listen to experience from other countries, even if we have difficulties in culture, political systems and priorities, economy and other preconditions. Before I give the floor to Olive and Eivind, I allow myself, well, as a former policymaker, to have a few words concerning the political development of child rights in Europe. It's very short. From my point of view, the national governments in Europe are renowned for their strong political commitment to promoting the human rights for the child. They have made significant progress in harmonizing national laws with international child rights standards. Targeted policy plans and strategies are being developed to strengthen the implementation of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, as well as regional standards and recommendations. Portugal, I think, is an example on that. Within Europe and internationally, the Council of Europe, especially the Council of Europe, and the European Commission are supporting governments in this process and are thereby inspiring and promoting political changes for children. We could spend a lot of time of summarizing what has been achieved for children through Europe the last 10 and 20 years. It's enormous. So we are on the road, on the track. Well, informed by solid knowledge and evidence and well aware of the complex challenges that the governments and their administrations are confronted with today, the national and regional debates in Europe are self-critical and steering for constant improvement, as Portugal is doing now. Structural and systematic obstacles may hinder the full implementation of an advanced child policy. Many excellent social innovation initiatives are implemented as time-bound projects, whereas the inspiration and innovation they produce is rarely sustained for longer-term implementation. And as Armando, Leandro, the judge, spoke about this morning, he said you need to have a change in culture. I will go a little bit further. You have to have a change in the mindset of society. Well, it's more or less the same. In order to promote positive change, there is a need for political leadership and a high-level team of social innovators. Within the administration, we inspire mindsets in support of a strong child rights agenda and vision. In my opinion, policymakers and public officials need to be equipped and mandated to act more as social innovators. They should be trained to anticipate the dynamics of childhood in making policy and place children at the center of policy planning processes. Finally, to achieve that, we need to use all our strength together with young people and children. And forming policy, I think it's very, very important that we also bring children and young people on the arena. Well, to be creative and find new ways on evolving them in public decision-making. It's about commitments. It's about future generation how to learn democracy and inclusion. Coming together as we do today is a good start and a good platform to learn from each other. Well, dear colleagues, let us listen to experience from Ireland and Norway. And we start with Ireland, and I give the floor to you, Olli.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm delighted to be here with you this afternoon and want to thank the organisers for inviting Ireland to participate and to have an opportunity to share with you the journey we have come on and a little bit about where we're going to go. Normally, when I present, I have two problems. Firstly, I speak too fast, so already I'm trying to slow down. Secondly, I have far too much to say. So for my presentation, I will skip through some of the slides, but I think the organisers can make them available to you afterwards because it's a story, a long story, but you don't need to hear all of it together. And I hope the slides can be self-explanatory once you've heard some of what I have to say. So over the next few minutes, I'm going to take you back in time a little bit on Ireland's journey. I'm going to share with you where we're at today, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what I see we need to do next. In all of this, I will provide some of my analysis of what have been our strengths and our weaknesses and the things that I think others might learn from. So, I better check I get this right. One of the key features of the Irish context that's very important to understand is that 20 years ago almost now, what was documented in Ireland was that we had complete failure in terms of listening to children and young people and putting children at the centre of policy-making processes and outcomes. The report on the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child in Ireland in the late 1990s was a very damning report. However, 20 years later, we're in a very different position. And what drove that difference was a decision and a commitment at central government level to do things differently. So, what have we done over the past 20 years? This list in front of you is some of the key things that characterise where we are today. So we have today a specific national strategy on children and young people's participation in decision-making. Throughout my presentation, I'll do a little bit of show and tell. So that's what that looks like. It is a dedicated five-year strategy specifically outlining what the government will do to improve the position of children and young people having a voice in decisions that affect their lives. I believe that it's very important to give that participation in decision-making context its full title all of the time, because it is about participating in decisions that affect their lives. It is not a process alone, it is a process with a decision and an end in sight. We have in our government a dedicated unit at central government level for about 18 years now, with a very specific, a dedicated unit on children and young people's participation, but we also have a government department with a specific focus on children and young people. Within our department, and also at the level of our local authorities, which I think are municipalities in Portugal, we have dedicated and ring-fenced resources. So there are people and there are budgets to do participation in decision-making work. 5 years ago, we settled on the Lundy model as our model of analysis and the national framework from which we would progress. And once we found that model, having analysed a range of models that were available at that time, we began the promotion and the dissemination of that model as the best appropriate way of progressing. And having that single theoretical framework from which the Irish work has evolved has been very helpful in terms of guiding good practice. At the local and the national level, we have invested in, developed and designed permanent, well-supported local and national structures for children and young people to have a voice in decisions. So there is a permanent structure that is about 12 to 14 years at the local level and national level. And I'll speak a little bit more about that at the end. But that is there, that is constant, and it's very well supported and now very embedded in the lifespan of Irish policy making. Another feature that has been important to us is the commitment to engaging in documenting and evaluating our work. So from the outset, that reflective practice and developing of the academic consideration of children and young people's participation has been a predominant concern of the department. And obviously all of this has happened against context of international policy drivers. So this is my analysis of how I would frame it. We've had our practice, which I feel has been one of the most important components of what we have done, even at the central government level. So while I'm head of a unit at principal officer level, we still do our work with children and young people every month of the year. One Saturday a month, as the head of the unit, I do the work with children and young people. I develop my practice. I develop my skills. So when I am out doing the leadership and promotion on children and young people's participation in decision making, I, as a senior civil servant, know what I am talking about. And we've put a lot of emphasis on this within our national framework and a lot of value on it within the work of our human resources unit within our department, because it is our belief and it is our experience that children and young people's participation is a practice. It is not a theoretical or a paper exercise. It means doing things differently. It means sharing power. It means changing the practice of how we, in our engagement with children and young people, work. And it is my firm conviction that if we had not been doing that ourselves within the ministry, within the government department, we would have had a lot less success in our leadership and in our advocacy work for this policy area across the system. I can talk from experience when I meet a principal social worker or a principal of a school or a senior civil servant from another government department that is questioning or doubtful or feels it's illegitimate. I can talk with experience of the value and the experience of doing this work. The other important component, obviously, is we have all the policy drivers. I spoke at lunchtime with Bjorn how, in the Irish context, my analysis is we have been much stronger on policy and strategy than on legal instruments. We have a number, but a limited number of legal instruments that are available to us to drive this work. I think it's a gap that we need to address into the future. However, there is also clear indications that even in the absence of the legal instruments, we have had very significant success. So that's interesting to experience in itself. And as I said previously, the intellectual and academic engagement has been very important. One noticeable feature when Ireland started on this road is that its prominence in individual universities peaks and troughs. It rises and falls and seems to be almost in the past dependent upon an individual academic taking this area of interest and staying with it for a period, then moving on. That has changed quite substantially. And in Ireland, what we have done is been part of driving that change. We've created networks of academics. We've provided them with opportunities for their postdoc students to come and observe, document, and evaluate the work we are doing. So that academic presence has been very important in terms of that level of buy-in. So, as I said, we'll be going back and forward in time. That's where we're at now, and those are some of the things that made it possible. I want to talk to you now a little bit about the development of our strategy in Ireland and how it came about. And the strategy was published in 2015, but as I've said, that was about 15 years after we really commenced this work. Ireland's immediate response to the damning report of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child implementation in Ireland was called the National Children's Strategy. And goal one of that strategy was that we should listen to children. So our first 15 years of work happened in realising goal one, that we must better listen to children. By the time we came to 2014, Ireland had moved towards a better outcomes, brighter future policy framework and a new vision, very much a transformed space from the late 90s, had emerged for children in Ireland. And that policy vision was for Ireland to be one of the best small countries in which to grow up and raise a family, and where the rights of all children and young people are respected, protected and fulfilled, where their voices are heard and where they are supported to realise their maximum potential now and into the future. As you can imagine, as the unit responsible for driving the policy around children and young people's participation and their right to a voice, we were greatly enthused by the fact that our national vision had the right for a voice to be heard right there up front and centre in that policy vision. In terms of the strategy itself, and there's only a few points of this I want to draw your attention to because most of them have been covered by other speakers. Obviously, the entire strategic approach in our national strategy has been guided by the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. However, our ministry in Ireland does go up to the age of 24 because it very much takes account of the transition to adulthood. Obviously, as others have said, it focuses on children in the here and now as the citizens of today and not just the adults of tomorrow. That becomes very important in separating out and respecting the complementarity of the work around educating for democracy. This is supportive of, but it is not directly related to that piece of work, which can often cause some confusion for some. We talk about individual and collective participation, and we have a very specific focus on seldom heard children and young people. And in fact, I can quite safely say in our most recent 3 years, about 70% of the work undertaken by our unit at government level has been directly related to our more seldom heard children and young people. Children in detention centres, children who are part of adoption proceedings, children who are part of criminal justice systems. These have been the particular preoccupation of policymakers most recently. So I can very confidently say that it is not just your usual suspects, children who have a view to a representative democracy role, that are engaged in the participation work in Ireland. So as I said, I'm going to skip a lot of the rest of them. Because you've had them covered already. This is a reflection again of some of the presentations from this morning and the reflection of Ireland's positioning of our strategy around Article 12, but identifying that Article 12 itself is interconnected with so many other articles in the Convention. These are all documented in the strategy. I wanted to include this particular slide, but it has already been covered this morning, and it is to draw attention to the general comments that are frequently released from the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child Committee, which are very, very important in terms of further illustrating and guiding understanding on how to realise Article 12 in a practical level at government, within government policy, but also within services. At local level. So we found right throughout our implementation process that the supportive text of the general comments has been incredibly important to us. And I've just drawn out some of those in particular there that we have used often in defence of why we need to do what we need to do when we meet opposition. Then, as I said, we settled after a number of processes to evaluate optional models. We moved forward with the Lundy model. And it was 2014, approximately 2013, when we settled on this model. So I can confidently say that we came to this model as the most appropriate and fitting model, having had 13 years of practice. And the recognition of the space, voice, audience and influence was very important. But also for us, what this model did that others didn't do was, or what this didn't do that other models did, was try to rate types of participation. And I spent just last Tuesday with Laura Lundy herself in Belfast, and we spoke a lot about it being very important that we don't dismiss different types of participation that are suitable for different contexts. And often and frequently, policymakers, service providers and frontline professionals will start with something that's relatively non-threatening, a quick questionnaire, a brief consultation, one focus group. And that's fine if that's what's relevant to the work they're doing at that time. Our experience is that once they've dipped their toe in the water, they want to do more, better and deeper work on children's participation, which is reflective of all four domains because they understand and appreciate the value of that work. So that's just to say how we came to the Lundy model. We've worked up the checklist that you have presented earlier today in more recent times, and we have put at the centre of it what matters to children and young people, because frequently, and this again is in a way a reflection of the success of the IRIS strategy, is that we have a long queue of policymakers outside our door wanting to undertake participation activity relevant to their policy domain. But unfortunately, it isn't always the issues that are of most interest to children and young people. So we have recently revised the model to put what matters to children and young people at the centre, and trying to bear in mind that this is a child-led and a child-centred process, and that what adults want to know about and think they need to know about can often not be the same thing that children themselves want to talk about. So, moving on a little bit then to talk about the detail of the strategy. Another important dimension for us was acknowledging that individual participation, so the child's participation in a legal proceeding, in a health service context and so forth, is different, but equally as important as collective participation of children and young people. So both are acknowledged equally. The other important dimension of our strategy was that we, again, having had a number of years practice, realised very sharply children live their lives in the everyday. So the everyday lives of children and young people and the places and spaces that they are entitled to have a voice in decision making is the focus of the strategy. It's a 7-objective strategy, and the first 4 focus on the lives of children and young people, their local communities, education schools and the formal education settings, health and well-being, including health and social services, and in the courts and legal system. And the final 3 objectives are focused on the work, I suppose, of my unit and our department in terms of the leadership on the strategy and promoting education and training of people involved in implementation. I'm conscious of the time. Our most recent innovation in Ireland has been the establishment of a centre of excellence. It's called Hub na n-Óg, and it is a national centre of excellence on children and young people's participation in decision making to support implementation of the strategy, to champion and promote participation, to develop and conduct training with frontline professionals and others, to document and disseminate learning, establishing an online database, and form strategic partnerships with organisations in developing and documenting best practice. The centre is just under 2 years old. We're making significant headway on lots of those actions, but there's certainly an awful lot more for us to do. 2 more points I just want to go to, and I'll go to this one first actually. As I said at the beginning, there's a bit of a show and tell about what we're doing. So from a national government department perspective, we're most frequently called upon to support other government departments and policymakers in consulting children and young people on decisions that affect their lives. So I brought with me a couple examples of things that we have done in the recent past. This is a consultation report, and again, I've brought them with you because in reflection of the Lundy model, we put a significant emphasis as a government department on audience and influence. The space and the voice we create by our process, but the audience and influence is something that as a government department we have a significant opportunity to do in a way that lots of other stakeholders don't. So all of our processes end up in very fancy publications like this. I've brought with me a couple of examples of the adult publications, but all of them would equally have a child-friendly version. So that's one on Children Seen and Heard. It's about commemoration of Ireland's independence. This is our LGBT strategy. 4,000 young people participated in the consultation for that. This is the adult report, and there was an online version for young people. This was a major report by our National Executive of Young People on their experience of school today. It was called How is School Today? And this is produced in English and in Irish and was disseminated to every school in the country to allow schools to interrogate the findings and see what practices they need to improve to make the lives of students better in their schools. And finally, I did bring with me one example of a child-friendly publication, and that's an example of a consultation with 66,000 for children and young people for our national strategy. So not only is it child-friendly, but every piece of it was selected and designed by children and young people themselves. So I just wanted to share that practical piece with you. The last other point I wanted to say was I know that Yvind is going to speak a little bit about the permanent structures that are available at the municipality level. For us, they're called Dáil na n-Óg and Corallian na n-Óg. And our Corallian na n-Óg are independent local authority, or they're not independent, sorry. They're youth councils in each of our municipalities that are the permanent recognised structure. There's also the National Parliament, which is a biannual event, which is Dáil na nOg. We will have our next one in November of this year. And then there is the Cuireadh na nOg National Executive, which is the body I work with every Saturday, one Saturday every month, to support delivery of the young people's work at the national level. So they're just examples of the pieces of work that we have underway. So finally then, just to see some observations on where we need to go next. We're undertaking at the moment, or we've just undertaken, a midterm review of the implementation of our strategy. Some of the things that I think are a little bit weak that could be stronger. I think we do need to move forward to provide a better legislative basis for our work. I think we need to better engage our NGO partners and sectors. At the moment, unusually for work like this, it's the government and the government authorities that are head of the NGO world. I think we need to bring our NGO partners better into the equation. And, yeah. I think that's really my observations for now. So I hope if you have any questions that I can further answer them at the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex. And we have sort of time, so I turn the word to Eivind. Eivind from Norway.
Thank you, Bjørn. And thank you for the invitation to come to Portugal. This morning I heard the ambassador of Norway to Portugal say that Norway is an advanced country when it comes to participation for children. And I agree with him to some extent, but I must give a broader picture of how it is in Norway. As you maybe know, Norway has incorporated the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. So today it is Norwegian law. We have also taken the main principles inside our Constitution Act from 2014. So we have a very good base juridically to come up with securing the children's rights in Norway. We have also, as I guess the ambassador thought of, improved relatively good in hearings and talkings with children who has individually cases in Norway proceedings. I can mention two examples. We have a new act for education, and the main changes in the new act is how we delay with the bullying cases. So here is taken in a new approach to hear every child who has something to do with a case that is under treatment. We have also a new work going on in the health sector. It's combined to children who has parents or brothers and sisters who is seriously ill or has died. These children has now the right and the personnel in the institutions have the duty to talk with them and come up with the needs they may have for their future lives. So this is very good. But I will not dwell so much with the individual child. I have made up my mind to talk as the participation for children groups in Norway. So the things I'm now going to say is about participation for children groups. So here you can see where I come from. The north of Norway is far away. I had a very long trip yesterday to come here, but it was driving from the cold Norwegian, north Norwegian coast to a warm Portugal. It was very nice. In Norway, we have now a population of 5,300,000, and the amount of children or those who can contribute in youth councils are about 23% of the population. And would you believe, we have in Norway in 2018 422 municipalities. As a local authorities, 422, and 50% of those, more than 50% of those, has less than 5,000 inhabitants. The biggest is our capital, Oslo, who has 670,000 inhabitants, and the smallest is a commune, a small island called Utsira. There live 228 persons. And they have the same obligations, same duties as every other municipality in Norway. And there is an ongoing municipality reform in Norway. We have worked with it, and from 1st of January 2020, we will have 356 municipalities, and our government wishes to come down to lower the amount. Parallel with this, we have also taken account of the counties and regional municipalities, who was 19th and now will be 11. And the county governor's office, where I work, the local state offices, is now reduced from 18 to 10. And why do I say this? Yes, because it's a question when we come to the participation of youths in special. Is it the better for them to contribute or to participate in a bigger area? As you maybe saw of the map, we have in Norway is a very long and narrow country, and we have very many small districts. And the situation for the youth is when you are going to be 16 and you want to go to the high school, you must move from your small community. And you must not just move and drive a long way that day. You must stay over the whole week on the place where you have this high school. So this is a challenge for how can then a youth council work and be able to have a story in the local municipality when all the children from 16 to 18 has gone. We have renovated them from the smallest communities, and that is a challenge. How can we handle that? We can say you can maybe have meetings on the internet, or you can have all these interesting things on going on groups on the internet. But I guess the youngsters working with young youth councils, they want to meet. They want to talk with each other. They want to have things together. They want to meet local politicians. They want to meet other youths to discuss things and matters coming up in the community. We have a new Municipality and County Act from 2020. Further, I will say that this is a very nice thing for us who has worked for it. But in Norway, we have had historically two different councils working. This had been a duty for the municipality to have. This is one for the elderly people and one for the persons with disabilities, all ages. This has been imposed for many years in every municipality in Norway. A third council for youths has been voluntarily established in 80 to 90% of our municipalities. A lot of them, and I know from experience, they are just on the paper. They are not working, they are on the paper. You have a youth council, but it has no meeting, no documents coming in, no documents and things coming out. So our politicians made a proposition for a new municipality law, and you can see to the right that a council for youths or another body representing the youths are imposed also in Norway, and that's very, very good. And the ministry is now working with new regulations for all three councils. The regulations for the youth maybe will handle how will the youth be elected, how long can they sit in the youth council, how old can they be before they are elected in the youth council. And the government has also discussed a lot of how can we get a local body for youth to work. And they have put up four criteria for participation success for a youth council. And the first is that this is called a real influence. This means that youths must be given opportunities to take initiatives, create and present ideas, and contribute in all hearings relevant for youths. The second is that you have to have a contact person, an employee with a key role to secure a continuity in the youth council. He or she must also catch up ongoing relevant cases, simplify political documents, create a good and constructive environment inside the Youth Council, inspire and then keep up the power of the Youth Council. And this person must be given enough time, resources, and be a person considered as a person with professional legitimacy. And the person must also, and maybe that is not so easy, handle the internet and be able to deal with online resources, communications through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I have talked to a lot of middle-aged persons in the municipalities, and they are not so well acquainted with all these new internet resources. And so that is a challenge too. To have a clear mandate which defines children's rights, duties and possibility is very important. The mandate must be approved by the municipality council and well known both for children and for adults in administrations and politics. And the last one is that politicians and administration personnel has to meet the young councils on their areas by asking ideas and views. Giving such respect and recognition is important for a good dialogue. That was the criteria set up by the ministry. In Norway, we have some other ways to participate, but first to local bodies. We have this Council for Youth, which is now imposed from 2020, from 14 years up to 18, 19 years. A lot of municipalities have also a Children and Youth Municipality Council, which catch up children also already from 10 years, and that will be in the face of learning democracy, and that will also be a goal for a Children and Youth Municipality Council. Children can be members or elected in local district committees. And student councils for primary schools are also imposed by law, so they can participate in all special school matters. Children can, through membership in interesting groups, for example, we have two groups interesting to mention here. The first is the Association for Children in Child Protection Services. This is, Bjørn, you were the one of the who took action to build this association, and I guess it's now 20 years old. It has been working all the time, and is very well acquainted with all the things that has to be done and said. And the other interesting thing is in Norwegian, Forandringsfabrikken, the fabric of change. Which is an organization which is both an association and a knowledge center, which produces a lot of speeches from children who has experienced different things in their lives, also among the child protection services. PRESS is the youth organization to save the children. Very active in Norway, very active, combined to the report to the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child. And in planning cases, we use in Norway what we call barnetråkk. I don't know if it is acquainted in Portugal, but it is used in public planning for area. In barnetråkk can be translated to where the children moves. And it is taken in school as a way for children to mark on the map where do you move from day to day, from your home to school, from your home to friends, from your home to the playground, from your home to the city, and they shall also mark areas in the neighborhood which is dangerous for them. So this makes a total map for planning personnel in the municipality to see what does the amount of children in school say to us about this area. What have we to do to secure that their meanings are taken in account? And the Ombudsman for Children has also over years used so-called expert groups which is youths with special experiences. They could be have mother or father in prison. They could be youths exposed for violence and sexual abuse. And they could be children living in poverty. In a rich country in Norway, we count now that 10% of children are living in poverty. So it's not so that the country is rich, some children will still be poor. And that was what I had planned to say. I don't know, Bjorn, if you want me to say any more, but I'll stop there.
We have been spending all evening then. Okay.
I forgot one thing. I must take that. I'm sorry, Bjorn. As you said when you introduced me, so you spoke about the Giant Leap. The Giant Leap program is a program made in the county governor's office in Troms in 2009. So we are now celebrating 10 years for the Giant Leap. The Giant Leap has a certain tool based on a self-survey and local analysis done in municipalities based on 7 steps. And the 7 steps also includes control issues derived from 12 UNCRC articles. The first step is the Article 12, number 1 and 2. The other steps is about Article 18, 26, 27, Article 20, Article 19, Article 23, Article 24, 28, 29, 30, and 31. So we have included 12 articles in the work with the Giant Leap. And this is what Draghi, Telia, said. He called a concept a many agencies concept. Because the Giant Leap, the control issues which the different agencies has to work with, there is more than 40 questions, and they have to meet together and discuss the questions so they can come up with a broad understanding of what do we do in this municipality and what have we what's lacking, what have we success with, and what have we to do to be a better. So the Giant Leap survey is done in more than 200 municipalities in Norway, and is used as the Norwegian document that the best way can use the United Nations Convention of the Rights of the Child. And it has also been told from the UN Convention of the committee that they have said that this is a very workful tool done in Norway.
Thank you, Eivind. Yes, that's also been, this Giant Leap has been exported to England, so my Irish friend maybe can talk to them. It's a very interesting model. Okay, we have used our time, but if there are any questions to one of the nations, if not, you may have the internet. A lot of documents are laying there and in English, so you can find more information that. So I would like to thank you both for very interesting input to this seminar. I give them a lot of applause, I think.
Damos agora início à mesa redonda intitulada.
Let's now start the round table on the Parliament's role in promoting policies protecting child rights in public decision making. Wisleit Ramos, member of our Parliament, Edith Estrela, member of our Parliament and Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe as well, Elsa Page, Member of Parliament, President of the Subcommittee for Equality and Non-Discrimination, Virginia Braz Gomes, former President of the Economic, Social, Cultural Rights Committee of the UN, who will chair the session. So I will give the floor to Virginia Braz Gomes, former president of the Economic, Social, Cultural Rights Committee of the UN. I have an advantage in relation to the other chairpersons because those included in this panel are very well known, and I could never mention their very long CV, and I will reiterate that they're all members of parliament. And Leit Heimsch and Edith Stiller are members of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, and Elsa Page, which is president of the Subcommission or Subcommittee for Equality and Non-Discrimination. I would like to start by reminding you that the bodies involved and the Committee of the Child Rights gives relevance to the active participation under the obligation of the ratification of the Human Rights Treaty. This initiative today, promoted by the National Committee Promoting Children and Youth, with the Parliament's support as well as other partners, this is a step along these lines. My question relates to what we've been discussing over the day. Many aspects linked to the participation of youth and children in public decision, different opinions heard from national and international partners, points to the fact that their participation should not be limited to personal issue linked to realizing their rights like education, health, social services, but should be realized in defining policies and the public decision making. And this is much more complicated. And what I wanted to ask initially, what role for the Parliament to promote children's effective participation, in other words, that contributes to include their contribution not limited to consultation. And maybe I would start with Edith Stiller, that I had the pleasure of exchanging views at lunchtime, so I'm going to start with you, Edith Stiller. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to greet the members of the panel and our chairwoman, Virginia Braz Gomes. I'd like to congratulate Odette Severino for the proposal, to have proposed to organize this timely conference, and which received the support of our Parliamentary Assembly of the European Commission, because I don't have much time. And to avoid redundancy, I'm not going to refer to the instruments mentioned. And since I was busy with other topics, unfortunately, I could not take part in this morning's sessions, which probably would have been quite rich. I'm not going to refer to the instruments, international, European, national instruments to protect children, recommending an active participation of children and youth in the decision-making process. But let me refer to the fact that it was in 1990 that a change occurred. And I would say that it was a type of conceptual change in the substance, and children were not only considered as a object of rights, but assumed the role of subject of these rights. And this is very important because it contributed to a shift in mindset. And I hope that my colleague Louis Leitrange, I hope that he will speak about the Council of Europe's role in that area. And I would like to also mention that some concerns, that I have some concerns, namely the children's relationship with justice, because quite often, from my point of view, what is enshrined in the law, the best interest of the child, I wouldn't like to use adjectives, but let me say that in terms of parental responsibility, when there's a divorce or in case of adoption, if the child's opinion was heard and taken into consideration, surely enough, the results would have been much more positive, because there are some legal decisions that causes some curiousness. And I believe that it would be important, and this is the recommended of the strategy of the Council of Europe recommendation, that children be heard and also be accompanied. That is, that there would be a preparation of these children when they go to court. Now, what I'd like to elaborate on is an experience that I consider to be very successful. That is the experience of the Youth Parliament, an initiative from our parliament in 1995 for students of basic education, and in 2001 extended to secondary education students. And from my point of view, is the best example, best initiative promoting children and youth participation in democratic life that I know of in Portugal. Now, how does this happen? Every year a theme is selected with young people's input, a different theme, and on which proposals are presented, discussed, and voted in the schools. And then these proposals have been selected at a school level, discussed at a district or regional level. And those that pass, the 10 most voted on, are discussed nationally, which is carried out in our parliament. In this room where we find ourselves, this is where parliament, the youth parliament, meets, and where they discuss these proposals, which are on very different topics, for instance, like the influence of mass media in society. They use policy in terms of information, knowledge, organization of political power, political participation of citizens, sovereignty, sovereign bodies, construction, social responsibility, in preventing risk behavior, failure, school dropout. The Republic is 100 years old. Our Republic celebrated 100 years. What future for education? Social network, social media, what employment, democratic crisis, birth rates, and so on. Public-private education, what challenges? Portugal, asymmetries, hinterland, coastline, gender equality, climate change is saving the oceans. These are some examples which were discussed in this process at the Youth Parliament, as I've mentioned. Now, let me underline that we need youth to improve democracy, and we improve with more democracy, more information, more debates, more proposals, more solutions, more knowledge, and also with more respect, respecting the other and respecting different opinions. Now, if we do not involve our young people at an early stage, we won't have a democracy as we would like to and how they would like to as well. Now, What is a parliamentary? What can we do? We can do a lot. All of us have ideas. I also have mine, and I know that children and youth that are more knowledgeable about their rights are able to better defend them daily in special situations, as I've mentioned, namely in courts. And I also know that children not used to participate have a more passive attitude, silence. They're more exposed to abuse, and these are children that suffer more. It's not enough to have a good legal structure to strengthen children's participation in decision making, and we could always compare what's happening in our country in terms of domestic violence. We have good legislation in the country, but there are flaws in its enforcement. I agree with support offices to provide support to children, focus groups on relevant issues. It's essential to listen to children, to hear them, because they represent society, that is, children that have been affected by the migration crisis, children's asylum seekers, outcasts with disabilities, more vulnerable children, mistreated children should be heard in the legislation process, preparing legislation and also in preparing the action plans and programs that matter to them in all matters affecting them. And I'm certain that these children and young people will surprise us with their mature proposals and views, and the laws will be more just to them and fair. I'd like to conclude by mentioning a proposal, which is the creation, and this with Parliament, to set up a committee, mandatory consultation on legislation and policies affecting them, like citizenship, institutionalization of children, another citizenship, parental aspects, and so on. And I believe that there's also a scenario where children could be very useful with their views concerning the digital world, like the internet, social media, online games, where we recommend it's pressing to intervene to define rules, strategies, so as to reduce children's youth exposure to multiple risks known. All this is necessary, but it's children and youth that have to say how to do what should be done instead of us. Defining in a patronizing way. So I think it's very important for children to be heard in the assessment of these procedures so that indeed they understand that we take them seriously and that their views are important, that their opinions matter. I'm leaving you with my commitment that similarly to the youth parliament, instead of being us defining how they should participate, young people and children, that we hear, that we listen to them, give them the floor, promoting a debate in school and at a regional level, in parliament, so that they can tell us what's the best way to be heard, what is the best way to participate in decision-making, namely regarding the process defining laws and also concerning the promotion of policies which matter to them. So the debate would start at school and in parliament. The best ideas would be the ones used, as I've mentioned, in relation to the youth parliament. I think it's very important to give voice to children and youth. This is my commitment to collaborate along these lines, and this is the challenge that lies ahead to society, the educational community, members of parliament, and those and all those that want to contribute that children be heard and taken into consideration, taken seriously. Thank you.
Em primeiro lugar, vamos ver o que dizem os seus colegas de mesa e depois, com certeza...
Now, let's see what your fellow panelists have to say and see if we can have time for questions and answers, sir. Mr. Leitchelms. Good afternoon. I would like to begin by thanking Dr. Letzerilio and Zib. The promotion of the rights and protection of the children and the youth for this initiative. And I would like to greet you all, the Estrela, Elsa Paz, and Luis Leitchelms. I'd just like to mention a couple of things. It's got to do with our experience. That is the Parliament Assembly of the Council of Europe. Now, in 2016, there was a specific subcommittee for children was created, and so the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe has MPs from four to seven countries, practically all of Europe, Azerbaijan, Portugal, Spain, and Finland. And so it was mainly in three areas: human rights, state of rule of law, and democracy. As you can see from the flyer that was handed out, or the folder that was handed out, Europe has a strategy on the rights of children, where it enhances the role of children in decision-making and in the family, etc. And so we've been working in 2016 on a number of matters. When we begin with a number of relevant matters, a very important campaign, it's got one of five, and it's a campaign to denounce sexual abuse in children. And it is one of five is the result of a study that shows that one in every five children suffer from some kind of aggression or sexual abuse. We work in the questions of internet, the problems and the challenges that this world and this universe of technologies and the web block and children and their rights. And so we've also been working in the question of participation of children in public policies. Now there's a work, it's called Giving the Floor to the Children, and it is based on the assumption and a number of principles and approaches that were discussed here today. And as with regard to these reflections, last week we had an experience where the MPs of the Parliamentary Assembly invited a number of youths from between the ages of 7 to 15, and we will be tried up to a certain extent too, with a number of people who are experts in this matter, and with experience of good practices to understand how we could involve children, not only asking them for sporadic opinion, but to begin to set up a decision-making process. And the reflections that I wanted to share with you have a little bit to do with the learnings that were distributed over these last months. And so I'm going to repeat a lot of what I said today. So if we consider the mere initiative, no continuity, no consequences, no return, and no feeling that the contribution and participation of children has a direct effect on what they're being consulted about, makes no sense. And so it can become something. It's not a process, it's not a participation, a real participation. I'm going to go into the grounds and justifications for this participation. I think that we all agree with this, but this note is relevant because it requires that we have a number of responsibilities of those who organise these participation. When you think of these assumptions, for example, somebody in the room said, but how can we motivate people, children to participate when the level of participation of adults are very low? I think they can be seen this in the opposite way about. I mean, it's because the level of participation is low, it's important to encourage and to treat that participation in a very serious and democratic way, so that it can contribute to alter a number of questions and decisions that have got to do with them. And so the question of the concept of participation, which is not only in the different conventions and the in the United Nations, they talk about this. There's a whole number of other rules. There was one in the slide. There was an explanation of the four dimensions, the voice of space, influence, and if children don't feel that there's a space to participate appropriate to the conditions, then regardless of what social background they're for, this is another problem. We have to open participation to children who normally don't talk about poverty, social exclusion, without bringing children to live these problems every day is, in my opinion, a little bit absurd. But it doesn't make sense the same way that the problem of migration should have the involvement of children who live this reality as said in the question of voice, to give them the ability to express their feelings, their opinions, the question of the audience, and if they are sufficiently able and to gather this information and to use this message to activate the things, and if this contribution doesn't become a process that brings in all these citizens, then something's wrong, and so the influence will so these contributions can influence the production of laws, and there's a number of criteria that I totally agree with. This process has to be marked by a number of dimensions: transparency and the voluntary nature, relevance, the ability to create conditions and environments for children to be able to express themselves. If we're going to create an environment appropriate for adults, but it doesn't allow children to fully express themselves freely, then the quality of the contributions will suffer. And the question of the inclusive nature and the preparation, I don't think that children can be part of this preparation without suitable preparation. And this is what we did last week with these children. There was a participatory meeting, and the number of aspects that were given, specific information was given to them. But to conclude, so this work that we're actually doing in the parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe is to create a number of good practices who will represent this in the different states, and that will have them the obligation to implement them or not. But there's a number of questions in terms of training. Now, this participation requires a number of skills, not only for those who actually promote these meetings, but the children themselves. And so training is a fundamental issue here. Now, the dissemination of good practices, today we had the privilege of hearing a number of examples of countries that are very advanced in this area. And they, of course, we can take advantage of these and adjust them to our conditions, our realities. And then we have another of other aspects, the creation of their own structures. And the proposal of Edith is a very good example. That is to create instruments, mechanisms, entities that are going to help us implement this dynamic. And then the and to work well on the matters we're going to ask children for their opinion. I'm not saying that we can talk about all or give opinions on all of them, but we have to think of the questions to be asked, the contributions we want them. If the things aren't done well, the result will not be good either. And so from this point of view, there is a number of matters, and so hand out an expert that was commissioned for an expert in this area, and so if you would see it, you may look at it as a state of the art and can be useful for this perspective to share this experience, and we in the Parliament can move forward with this, and this is a compromise that we all take to introduce this concern in the Parliament, but more than this, to create practices and mechanisms to ensure that this is a way to develop the regime and the democratic regime, including children. Thank you very much. Well, of course, participation is a process that we build. When we talk about participation, it's an end, but it's also a process in relation to adults as well. If it's an extemporaneous participation, it's sporadic, it doesn't really create citizenship, but I think that the youngest ones have a better position to participate properly. Thank you very much, Virginia. I'd like to greet you all, the colleagues of the panel, and to thank the initiative promoted by the National Commission for the Promotion of Rights and Protection of Rights and Youth, and to hold this conference in the House of Democracy is a commitment to do something that has not yet been done in terms of the Convention of the Rights of Children. The right to be heard is absolutely vital, this convention, and it should imply that, as Dr. Virginia said, in the decision-making process, it should be an absolutely central issue so that the higher interests of the child can be secured. If not, something will be totally incomplete in this process of the definition of the higher interests of the children. There is no higher interest of the child if you don't hear the children themselves, and as it was defined in Article 12 of the Convention. And for this aspect, the member states should guarantee that the children be heard immediately or through the representatives of different modus operandi carried out by member states. But I would like to say that the strategy of the Council of Europe on the Rights of Children that is in force, recognizing that with the enshrinement of all these rights, the European legal systems are not sufficiently well adjusted to the specific needs of children, and therefore to hear them, hearing them is not always a practice. And so initiatives of this type are extremely important to add contributions to fulfill this question. Now, Portugal has a very... They'll be very proud of what we have done, that is, through the National Commission of the Promotion of Rights and Protection of their Children and Youth, with their basic model, with a community model that we consider very important and enshrines this national committee and the accompaniment and the evaluation of the national strategy of the implementation of the Convention of the Rights of Children, taking into account these relevant statistical data. In its implementation, we have a number of mechanisms. We have the ombudsman, which is... which deals with very specific areas in the area of the rights of children and is essential to ensure that there will be platforms of justice and find the most appropriate solutions for the convention fulfills all its dimensions. Both institutions present their reports to the Parliament every year. We have just and so there's a commitment of Parliament with the praise and the evaluation of these reports, which each one fulfills the Convention of the Rights of Children. I would also like to point out that our internal legislation establishes the principle of hearing and consultation of the child in both in the scope of civil law and criminal law, and it also says that children should be heard as long as they are over the age of 12 or under this age, taking into account their degree of discernment and maturity. And others do not have this limit, but we, with this limit, do have a certain leeway for them to be heard, even if they are not 12 years old. But in any case, there is an in all legal systems that I can see there is a great unanimity. That has to be very friendly. This idea of hearing children, consulting with children, has to be done in a very friendly manner. And so there has to be voluntary information, respectful and relevant, and it should be professionals who carry out this process. The major issue so what can we do instead of just being involved in these reports in the fulfillment of the law, which is a legal framework with regard to these rules. The role of Parliament is central. When we can think of the of involving children in a process of the internalization of human rights by children. So this process of hearing children, it can be a process of raising awareness of rights, and this can be central within the scope of the subcommittee of non-discrimination. There is an ongoing report on xenophobia, racism and ethnic and racial discrimination. Now, within the scope of this report, a number of actors, agents involved in this process, those who actually suffer from this type of discrimination, experts, scholars, different services, and I think that as far as this is concerned, together with the proposal put forward by Eddie Strela, we can add another proposal to think of a report on the children's rights with a rapporteur not appointed by the Parliament, so that there can be a number of hearings can be made. We'll make them, but sometimes they're not enough. And so it's very important that all the contributions can be set out in a parliamentary report on children's rights and the decision-making process in the exception of these rights. I read this report that Dr. Louise Grelet-Tran spoke about the Council of Europe, and I understood that experts realise that there are a number of ways for children to participate in these processes, and the most negative is non-participation, or the manipulation of their participation, which, of course, we have to be very cautious and make sure that this does not happen, and we must make sure that the children's opinion may not be in any way manipulated, and this is a danger that cannot be neglected. And so, for consultation of participation promoted by children. And here, this range of types of participation led me to reflect on what occurs in more global areas like the environment, and we mustn't forget the importance of Greta Thunberg in the appeal she makes to adults, to for all of us to look after the house we all live in, and this appeal is done by a youngster. And so here there is here this is very clear. We mustn't only leave the future in the hands of adults, which concerns us and them. And so here, another recent scene where children played a very pedagogic role in the education of adults. I mean, this is ongoing, the recycling of the waste, where it was the children's selves who would teach their children, and they were shocked when they didn't have the appropriate cycle bins. So we cannot today well, nowadays we participate in processes at a much earlier age. We have to think of mechanisms that are not are judicial, but other mechanisms where children can and must be heard in order to have a stronger dialogue with the bodies responsible for the monitoring and implementation of the treaties of the human rights treaties of the United Nations. So I'm here representing the Commission of Equality, but we will ensure that the President of the First Commission hears these proposals on the rights of children and forms of promotion and forms of promoting their rights, and this can be used in the assembly, and they're all very pertinent because the experience that we have from the Youth Parliament is an extremely enriching experience, because legislative processes cannot must, or rather must, hear very carefully what children have to say to us in relation to the construction and the future of society where they live and which is their future. Thank you.
Do Parlamento sobre os direitos das.
So, after having underlined xenophobia and racism, both rights affects negatively is inequality, which is cross-cutting, and I believe this is very important because Portugal will present in October the periodical report implementing the rights of the child to the committee in charge of its monitoring, and after when it will submit its conclusion, there will be a lot of room to continue these discussions. I'd like to thank the three speakers, and I'd like to ask our audience to put some questions to our members of parliament. It's a good only opportunity we have, and maybe we could benefit from that fact. So it seems that everything is clear.
Sim, faça favor. É só um bocadinho de tempo às vezes.
Eu não sei se me conseguem ouvir. Uma boa tarde a todos.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Can you hear me? Asks the speaker. I have some questions to ask to the members of Parliament, because indeed this is Parliament, this is the House of Democracy, and our children and young people are part of us. And this is where the decisions are taken, those that are more important, less important, and we want to believe that they're all important. And before I ask the question, I'm going to say my name. I'm a lawyer for the last 32 years. I have quite a lot of experience in family law, a lot of experience promoting and protecting young people at risk. And I've been commissionary for the last 9 years in the Commission Protecting Children and Youth from Almada, which is on the other side of the bridge, says the interpreter. Now, I don't know if it's a question or a reflection, so that all of us present and the members of Parliament, because you have this obligation, you've been elected by us, and you represent all citizens, and I want to believe that something has to change, and I'm amazed. This is not a political attack because it has nothing to do with policies, regardless of the party which is in office or not. I'm not interested in that. In addition to the fact that this is the end of a legislative, another will start after elections. And what I want to do is question, and if someone can answer, because it's something that I've been asking questions about, the convention, International Convention of the Rights of the Child, if from 1989, ratified by Portugal in 1990. And we are in 2019. And this is 2019, and as a citizen, I'm here speaking as a citizen, and I really cherish this area because children and young people are the ones that will rule. And we're speaking about Europe and Portugal, right? So I'd like to know that how come are we discussing after these many years, why are we discussing the participation of children in all matters that concern them, namely legislation which now, concerning what was said and point taken, and I would have liked to ask a question to a prosecutor, former prosecutor, Joana Marques Vidal, but we only have here the judge, we only have Judge Leandro, that is interested in these areas and fight every day for children's rights. And I know many, I work with these children. And I know that there are a lot of people dedicated to these causes, dedicated their lives, but it's unbelievable how, and as was said by Mrs. Marques Vidal, the former prosecutor, we have no legislative problems regarding these different areas. What we have is a problem of mindset. And Joana Marques Vidal mentioned earlier, she spoke about our courts, also mentioned by the member of parliament to legislative change in 2015 to the general regime, hearing children, Article 5, which is compulsory, but 4 years after. But before this, there was already there was regulation of in terms of parental aspect, in terms of minor regulation, that is the parental responsibility, related to parental responsibility, courts could hear the children and young people if they sought to. And based on my experience, many magistrates considered that children did not have enough maturity to be heard, and most of the time they wouldn't hear them because you lose time, there aren't conditions. Well, we heard over the years being mentioned that the courts have no means, health as well, the health sector, so every situation we've heard of. But children could and should be heard now for many years. And from 2015, the courts, and this is mirrored in Article 5, as I've mentioned, hear children and young people, but they hear them, and most of the time they hear them in conditions which are not the most adequate, especially children. But there are still some professionals that are able to do so, and others. And these areas should be much more professionalized because they're much more sensitive, because they deal with children and young people. They should have very skilled, qualified professionals with specific training regarding these matters. Now, what I'd like to ask the members of Parliament...
Edith Estrela
spoke about the Youth Assembly. And I was able to understand, and this is curious, we mentioned this, and we are informed, this youth assembly, and we have a mass media. I've never heard of this youth assembly, strangely enough, says the lawyer. Although it's very good, but I don't know about it. I can't say much. I can't say anything about it. But to have a youth assembly a year, it's not a contest, but the ideas are submitted in schools. Also, and this consultation of children and youth do not relate to that, right? So children and youth should be consulted, and this should be part of our life, our political life, and their political life as citizens.
Sporadicamente.
And not, but it's been 30 years. And since I'm not saying anything new, Portugal ratified a convention, which is this international convention of on the rights of the child. When a country ratifies a convention, an international convention, in legislative terms, the convention is above all other laws. More yet, the state, the member state that ratified it, has to respect it and implement it in the state. And it states, this was just a reflection, and I would like to thank you very much. So my question is, why? I would have liked to have heard something more concrete about the participation of children and youth and many others. This is basically the question. Although you said at some point in your question, at some point in your comment, you said it wasn't a question, but it was actually a question.
Edith Estrela, posso começar por si?
Edith Estrela? I will have to leave because I have another meeting at 5 p.m. and that I'm late for. Now, concerning your remarks, by this visitor and participant at this conference, first of all, I can't really justify delays of not having done more over these last 30 years. But still some steps were made. Surely enough, we would have liked bigger steps. And I would like to quote Antonio Sergio. He said, what's most difficult is this mindset shift, not by decree. You don't do this by decree. Although the legislation amends procedures and changes mind attitudes and procedures, but these are steps that we need to overcome, steps that we know are not easy. This is about not having the means and the lack of means, or mentioning this lack of means as an alibi so as to maintain status quo and not changing anything. It's easier for people to keep on with their routine than changing, than having to take risks. At lunchtime, we spoke about that subject. There's a certain inertia from several agents. I'm not going to mention examples. So as not to take risks on one hand, and then when you change something, it requires efforts. We have to know what to change. So this is quite often the alibi that is behind inertia of not doing anything. About the youth assembly or youth parliament, it's a very big initiative. The fact that the mass media has not disseminated what is positive, what is being done in the country, is not the responsibility of those promoting that initiative. It's shameful that mass media only disseminates what is negative. Even RTP, the Portuguese public TV station, doesn't always do it. So this youth parliament is an extraordinary initiative, as I've mentioned, since 1995, 2001, taken to this to the secondary education level, and this year 500 schools participated. And it goes on to regional level, and then to parliament with the participation of members of parliament. They also go to schools. This is a process which is very dynamic, with great interaction, and which deserves to be continued, deepened, developed, participated, and so on. And it's regretful that the mass media, and as president of the youth and other associations, when they come to my committee, to my commission, fulfilling what is public is also to provide good news. Bad news are always disseminated instead of good news. And remind you of my proposal that there be a committee, a permanent consultative committee, to listen to young people in matters affecting them. So this would be very important. And this dynamic consulting young people on the way they could participate more in the democratic life of the country, and being more heard and taken seriously, taken into account, and to understand what they're saying is worthwhile, important, and that this process is serious, rigorous, and that they can believe in it.
Senhora doutora Elsa,
só uma notinha. Estes dinâmicos não são estáticos e não.
These processes are very dynamic and not static. We can't really say that we haven't done anything. It would be unfair to say it. In relation to what we've done concerning these different matters, we have a prosecution taking on board children's rights. We have helplines, national commissions protecting the rights of children and youth. And because of a legislative change in 2015, was entrusted to accompany and assess the national strategy applying the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. This is a dynamic process, and our legislative framework enshrines, and you know better than myself, because I'm not a jurist, the possibility to hear children from 12 years of age. And there are others which don't even define the ages, although we have 12 years of age enshrined. It also opens the possibility to listen to children that are under, taking into account if they're capable of forming their own views, so that this process, which is the desirable of transparency, information, good conditions, are defined. I read them this afternoon, and surely enough, they're well known by all. Even the fact that the magistrates not wearing the magistrate's robes, not even wearing, having to wear their robes or lawyers to speak with children. When they speak with children, the law defines a set of criteria so that children can be heard in a condition that allows them to express their views, what they feel. Canceling all inhibiting factors relating to decision, feeling, and will. So I believe that our legislation has been following, and these are topical, the fact that we are discussing the decision-making process of children regarding other procedures, and not only this one, like political and others, the right to being to associate, to be in an association, are part of the agenda and were not raised years ago. So in a dynamic follow-up of these children's participation in the process, that the legislation will also evolve concerning this one, as well as in our attention, is vital to accompany the best international practices. I wasn't able to listen to what Norway mentioned in terms of good practices, but surely enough, my colleagues can integrate such in all procedural aspects of our way of living in society. Recent movements that children assume at an international level, they're saying that their voices have to be heard, because there's a wake-up call concerning questions that we did not have a sensitivity in. We're strengthening it so that they're calling on to the fact what is important in terms of digital environmental aspects. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to give you one single minute. You actually said something about the participation that adults have, which is not very enthusiastic for the younger. I don't really understand how that can affect the younger generation, because this example, and I'm going to this question of mindsets. If we don't get around the phenomenon, then we have to change our mentality. No, we change our mindsets. Not by way of decree, it was through testimonies, witnesses, that it was worthwhile, and people will change their mindset. I'm going to leave you a proposal, because I'm sometimes very unhappy. We already have a very strong youth movement. And so, why don't we take advantage of the democratic base underlying this? Because they elect students' associations, and why don't we join them in the local education councils? And instead of thinking of macro initiatives, we can think of smaller ones, social networks. In so many instances, we could have greater creativity. I think the major difficulty here is the difficulty that affects us all. Those who have been in boards of universities, for example, school councils or whatever, there's always a problem. The participation always requires a distribution of power, and I don't think we're all ready to distribute our powers. I don't think there's going to be an answer.
Pela pertinência do que acabou de nos dizer.
Well, it makes sense for the youth movements CPCJ could be part of it, as already is. It makes sense, yes, because the local basis of reflection stakeholders that have a very active participation in communication. So if there are youth associations that in that community have a relevant role to play because of the fact that they have a very specific sensitivity due to age in relation to other problems certain problems that others don't have. So to hear what the youth have to tell us in situations for example at risk can promote prevention, because we know that how often do the youth need to speak to their peers. I think this is essential, so the dynamics of the councils will find a way to integrate this dialogue with the stakeholders and value the central role that the youth can have. With regard to the dialogue between peers, and so here, because in another area, which I'm not going to talk about now, prevention strategies can work better when they're carried out by their peers than others. And so here, this can have a very important role. Thank you very much. So I don't think we don't need anything else than what we've already got. As I said, we've already got it.
Obrigada.
Thank you very much. I think that's a very excellent way to finish this panel, and I would like to bring this panel to a close.
Convido-vos agora para a última intervenção do nosso seminário, conclusões e próximos passos, o que se segue. Passo então a palavra ao Dr. Odete Severino, Vice-Presidente da Comissão Nacional de Promoção dos Direitos e Proteção das Crianças e Jovens, membro do Bureau do Comitê dos Direitos da Criança do Conselho de Europa.
Muito boa tarde.
Good afternoon. It was a very long day of discussion on the right to participation, but we thought that after this discussion, we needed to think of the future. So that is based on what we heard today. I'm going to present three measures that we would like to see developed in this area of participation and for them to be worked on, but and to see what we think the right children have to participation in the public process, public decision-making process. The first measure, we have to protect the right to participate. And the right to participate, as was already said, we have the right to participate is set out in law, but as we saw, there is still a lot to be done in terms of its implementation. Practically speaking, as the first an important measure would be for the legal protection to the right to participation of children should be reflected in legislation. And this would be to show a national commitment guaranteeing the rights of children to participate in the processes that affect them. So the question is, this is a fact, we all agree with this, but how? That is through a legislative analysis that direct effect to the realities like protection, care, adoption, guardians, healthcare, consent for treatment, parental responsibilities, immigration, exile, criminal justice and other civil and administrative processes. So it'd be important for these children to be able to participate in terms of the participation in these areas. Then, to propose legislative alterations to make sure the legal obligation to hear the opinions of children in all areas that I mentioned above. Another proposal would be to explicitly include the participation of children as a part of a broader national strategy for the implementation, monitoring and assessment of the Convention of the United Nations, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child and other international instruments and conventions. So it would be important to implement the consultation processes that would promote the effective participation of children with regard to the implementation of the convention and other international conventions. Another of the measures would be the implementation of complaint processes, just to develop mechanisms for children to be able to complain and to adjust it to their specific age, namely to and public services like social security, health, justice and education, and to guarantee that the children are given the information on the right to complain, to receive help, as well as to support, to be given support for the came in accordance with their age and ability, capacity. Second measure, promote and inform of the right to participate. Now here, this was discussed throughout this session, that it is necessary to have to training on the participation of children in the training action of agents and professionals who work for children. And this means that this is present. And so there is an effort. So participation is not a spontaneous act, but the adults who work with children that there is a clear concern about training programs, as we've seen throughout this session. There is a need to have this concern. Now, it's not a spontaneous act where people can think that they may be able to deal with this, but There are specific methodologies which are necessary to ensure that these children are properly heard and consulted. And then there is another measure which we say would be important, is to have guides. And also to give children information on their right to participate. That's the discussion that we've had today. Shows that quite often we have to inform the children and youth what the right to participation means, how this is exercised, and in given matters there is a need to prepare these children and youth to have true participation, and this means that information must be created for children at different ages, including Braille. Now, with this session, we spoke about equal opportunity in terms of the participation in youth. And so there is a need to take this aspect into consideration. And then to promote the introduction in CVs. Subject related to children's rights. School is the basis. Of the birth of this right to participate, we have to work in schools to make sure that the people realise that the right to information is important. Children can participate, youth can participate in constructive ways in matters that concern them. And so this question of the right to participation must be put out there. And finally, I'm almost finished. The third measure, as I said, there are three measures, but up to a certain extent we can think of our near future about what we want for the right to participation. The third is to create spaces and opportunities for participation. I confess, I was very happy with the proposal put forward by Israel to create a parliamentary committee for the youth and children to be heard. Now, this is a result, and I hope it's possible in the next legislature. And this is an important step forward. One of the measures to create spaces would be to represent children through advisory bodies, decision-making, decisions in the government and in parliament. That is to introduce the advisory boards in the government and the parliament, and because it's necessary to have an effective participation in these areas, in the areas I have just mentioned, and there is a need for this participation to be organised, to be regular, to be permanent, and not only participation, but other participation where it is important, which is important, but it is not participation. It is a consultation that is done sporadically on different topics, which is discussed, and that's it. Participation is much more than this. Participation is a means, and that is why it should have structures. With its own methodologies, regular methodologies, to consult youth and children is a step. But then we have to take into account the fact that we have to see what the result of this consultation is, and that doesn't happen, or worse, sometimes we give the consultant, but then we don't have any feedback in this consultation. And then to take into account the opinions of the children and youth, and this, there has to be a great diversity, ethnic and not only. And so, once again, equal opportunities is fundamental to here. And we've heard this equal opportunity quite a lot today, and often in real life that doesn't happen. And so it made me think that in this, in these three measures, we also have to work on equal opportunities. Implementation of mechanisms in public services, social security, justice, education and health aimed specifically for children to guarantee the implementation of public services mechanisms that are ready to receive comments from children that are easily accessible and adapted to children and youth. And also, finally, to include response systems. Quite often, children, and I'm talking about the National Commission, we receive correspondence and we try and answer all the correspondence we receive, questions, queries, but there is a need as public agents, there is a need to answer. And this is very important. So there must be a structured response system, and public services are concerned about this and aware that this is necessary. I would like to finish my presentation with a number of thanks. I will not speak more in this session, and I would like to thank your presence in this session, which I think was important in terms of this topic of the right of children to participate. I'd like to thank the national team, which supported the whole organization of this initiative. I would like to thank the team of the Republic Assembly that right from the beginning, the very beginning, helped us in this initiative and was a great contribution for this initiative to take place in the best way possible, with very positive results, in my opinion. I would also like to thank Louis Leitchem, and Dr. Anna-Katharina Mensch, and Dr. Edith Strela, who are from the delegation right from the beginning, when I asked them to help organize this initiative, they immediately accepted and were extraordinary in terms of organization, and therefore I wanted to thank them. The Ilse Pais, she was also with us and gave her contribution, which was very interesting, and the proposals that we no doubt will talk about these proposals in the future, and also no doubt you're thinking, what's going on here? Well, here we have a graphic recording, and I'd like to thank Daniel Superdigal, who is a specialist here in Portugal, who does the graphic recording, and who was willing to write down the conclusions of all the sessions that took place here. And so we are going to have conclusions like this. of the seminar. I think this is quite innovative, but I think it's worthwhile, and you are going to, all of you are going to receive these conclusions, and we're going to publish them. So thank you very much for your contribution and your work, which is extraordinary. Thank you very much.
Bom, para encerrar este seminário, vamos...
And to conclude this seminar, let's listen to Ana Catarina Mendes, President of the Delegation of the of Parliament to the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe. So she is President of the Parliament's Delegation. I apologize for not being present during the day. But I would like to congratulate the work carried out by the Commission Protecting the Rights of Children and Youth, the outreach work they conduct, they're carrying out. And also I would like to warmly thank the work they've been carrying out, the work carried out by Judge Leandro, whose job has been remarkable in this area. And also, let me say that while I was preparing this session, I remember that 3 days ago, I asked my children after having read watch a movie. And I was thinking about José Mauro Vasconcelos, it's a Brazilian movie, the strength that people have in their hope, which still has to grow. And I'd like to refer to that book because it's a story tells us how important the child's context is. It's not the same thing to be born in a poor or richer house. And this is how we grow within our context and how we can come out of that limit beyond the four walls. And I see some people that I've met and that have gone beyond these walls and have given so much to Portuguese society because it's most likely that is being born in a house where you have less than others limits our options and what we can bear. That's why I defend in a radical, absolute way, I defend how important a school is in terms of the human fulfillment of children and citizens beyond just academic education. Schools play an essential role. The school plays an essential role in the choices we make, in our opportunities, the opportunities we have, and those that find in ourselves, those that can find what is best so that we can give the best to society, what is best. And the school should and shouldn't be just a place where you teach and where you learn scientific programs, as Aced Queiroz mentioned. On a school where you learn from books, the school has to, and this is mandatory, it has to be an incubator of human relations, discovery of new opportunities, a path defined in the life of a child and how it will mark the life of that child. And for what we are discussing today, since I've been here, the school has provided me, as well as my family context, to participate at a very early stage, participate in the decisions of my at home with my three brothers and sisters in a democratic way, but also my classroom at school where teachers gave us some room so that we could participate in the decision-making process. Maybe the first thing I remember had to do with the fact that I was very rebellious, that is, in relation to some exams. And I was aware that the exams that we had to pass if we wanted to go to university, if it hadn't been my anthropology subject, and he was 25 and I was 17, and I would always ask him for 10 minutes to ask my colleagues to come out of the classroom. Now, I'll give you 10 minutes. If you convince me, then I'll give you the time you need to see if you're able to mobilize the whole school. I mobilized the school and the teacher. I wasn't by myself. I was with many. And so the school, and that is why I'm talking about it, the importance of quite often as adults and the school, either teachers, helpers, to understand what each child wishes and what is the context of each child. That's why it's the ideal place to make us grow and to make us grow at that level. It's the best and more complicated instrument to reduce the differences of those born in a poorer environment than others, either rich, poor, different, open, closed, and so on. So I'm quite certain that the context that we're raised in will make us more or less active, more or less participative, as well as I believe that not fully enjoying our rights is also a fact. It's a fact of social impoverishment, economic and culture. And we also know that people in a poverty context do not know, do not realize, do not benefit from their rights, worsening their situation, and this in view of those that are more informed, more active, and so on. Let me say that it's not only the school, but it's your work that is in the Commission for the Protection of Children's Rights, making us analyzing so many problems. We can give that child a new opportunity, a path, a dream that can be emphasized, and that the educational system, our means, is a fair and real democratic channel of accessing knowledge and citizenship rights, and the child can continue its balancing mission of the asymmetries of each person child in its social and family context. And this is the path to make sure that today and tomorrow that there is a future regarding equal opportunities. And that's why stimulating young people's participation, not necessarily replicating adult models, but as I had the opportunity to listen at the end of this conference, by adapting this to the children's youth reality language, what children know and can know of, and that is why they should, at an early age, be informed of their rights and also be stimulated to participate, encouraged to participate in their daily decisions, and participating at different levels. And this is a problem we have today, and allow me to mention it as well. And that is, today, quite often, parents no longer share their decisions, structural decisions of our lives at home. They no longer share them, like cooking or decorating the house, or a decision on where to go on vacation, or just to speak about a book, which is very important today when we see that we're tired and it's easier to go on the social minion. It also gives you the illusion of participation. It's not real, although new technologies play an important role in decision making. And that is why taking into consideration children's and youth decisions enshrined in all conventions of and charters of the European Union in the strategy of the Council of Europe on the Rights of the Child 2016-2021 cannot just be proclaimed. They have to be actions. And this is where the Council of Europe's role is important, and also the Parliament. The Youth Parliament Program is an important component in the pedagogy of what is the democratic participation in institutions, knowledge of democratic institutions, but children's participation is more than just that. It's the decision, as was mentioned, the decision of being able to say that they want either A or B. And that's why it's not just a question related to the legislation that already exists. It's to apply, enforce the legislation of changing mindsets and behaviors. And I'd like to conclude by saying the following. All of this requires a commitment, serious commitment from our politicians that I'm included in. There's no magic recipe. But it's time to say this and to look at the world. And Salga Niemeyer would have been 75 years old. He was 29 years when he led the democratic revolution in Portugal, Salga Niemeyer. The youth in Timor were unlucky to have the massacre of Santa Cruz, but they woke up the world to help in Timor-Leste self-determination. The children are claiming a sustainable planet, like our Swedish young lady or other youth all over in our country. So young people in Hong Kong are fighting for a rule of law which is democratic, defending human rights. And that is why it's because of such causes that we embrace and the commitment of our politicians that I'm included in. And that I was lucky enough to live in a family that encouraged political participation more than party-wise, political. And I was lucky enough to find in my party the possibility of doing things. This is where I'd like with you to assume a serious commitment that is of doing everything we can so that there is more information, so that the younger population can directly participate, not only in their decisions, but participate in the decisions that are that of the future of their generation, because they will be tomorrow they will tomorrow decide. And let me conclude that a child is not just a voter. A potential voter cannot be. A child is not just the mere future of a citizen. Children are citizens of full right now and should be treated as such, always. Thank you very much. I would like to say that this member of parliament read a speech which was extremely difficult, not having it handed in to the interpreters, and with a metaphor related to a Portuguese book. Thank you. I'd like to thank everyone, and safe trip home.